It's time for Saturday Sports Talk on News Talk 1400 WDWS Champaign Urbana, where we talk all things Illini along with other area and national sports. Join the program by calling 217-356-9397 or send a text to the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. You can also email us at talk@wdws.com. Now, here are your hosts, Lauren Tate and Steve Kelly.
Good morning, sports fans, and welcome to Saturday's Sports Talk here on News Talk 1400 DWS. With you for a couple of hours, as always, until 11 o'clock. Lauren Tate is in the house. Yours truly, Steve Kelly. Our guest lineup includes Tim May from the Columbus Dispatch coming your way in just a couple of minutes. We'll talk football with him. Also, a football conversation with Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.com. Yesterday was football media day for the Illini football team. We'll have some comments from coaches and players coming up as well. Second hour, we'll talk Illinois basketball recruiting with Kedrick Prince from Rivals.com. And J.D. Collins from the Big Ten office will join us at 10:30. And I've got a short conversation coming up with Illini women's golf coach Renee Sloan about 10:45. In the meantime, phone lines are open, 356-9397. Mr. Tate, how are you?
Well, we're loaded today, Steve, and we got stuff happening in Maryland, stuff happening in Ohio State that nobody in the Big Ten wants to see.
And we'll talk about all of those things. Baseball yesterday, if you missed it, the Cubs came from behind to beat the Nationals 3-2. That was yesterday afternoon. Those two teams play again today. Cardinals beat Kansas City 7-0. Matt Carpenter, home run number 32 on the season. Is he the hottest hitter on the planet?
Absolutely. He's rolling.
And you have a theory on Matt Carpenter?
I do have a theory.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why he's hitting so many home runs.
Okay.
Last year, he hit ball after ball, lined sharp shots into the shift. They have three players on the first side, on the first base side. And this year, he started out doing the same thing, hitting below 200 with a lot of balls that would normally be hits, fielded, and thrown out. So he decided he needs to hit the ball over the shift. I think he was trying to lift it over the shift, and the next thing you knew, he has a now swinging arc that's lifting the ball, and it's lifting it right out of the ballpark. That's my theory.
Well, I think it's a good theory. I think you can see that. I mean,
well, you know who said it? He did.
Yeah.
He said, I've got to get it over the shift. Okay. Hit it over the shift, and then if you lift it and you hit it good, it's going to go all the way. So he's one of the new, and this is a, I don't know if he came into the league with this theory, but a lot of players are, and he's just simply late into the game in terms of trying to lift the ball, and you know, you see what's happening. I think that's what's happened. I think that he intentionally is trying to lift the ball over this shift, and is finding that it's winding up being home runs.
Well, May 15th, he was batting 140.
Yep.
With three home runs.
Yep. And a lot of shots right into that shift.
Yeah.
Remember, I mean, you know, and a lot of batters in the old days, but not many years ago, batters tried to level off, Steve. You tried to hit a line drive. You tried to level. If you hit it underneath a little bit, maybe you could lift it and hit a home run. But most batters were not swinging with that upswing that he is now, and a lot of others are now.
Other baseball last night, the White Sox had a walk-off home run. Daniel Polka, a walk-off homer in the ninth inning to beat Cleveland by a score of 1-0. PGA Championship continues down in St. Louis. They had some bad weather yesterday. Gary Woodland is the leader at 10 under par. We'll keep an eye on that as we move along. Tiger Woods, 3 under par. He didn't get his round finished yesterday. We'll have Tim May coming up for you in just a moment, but first let's take a call from Eric. 356-9397 is the number. Eric, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing?
Good.
I just did a random Google search of Illinois football just to kind of get predictions and whatnot, and it wasn't good. I think every publication has them picked 14th in the Big Ten. Every publication has Lovie Smith ranked the 14th coach in the Big Ten. How can you be positive about any improvement in the program over the last 2.5 years? What really is there to look forward to? I think it's the most overrated coaching hire probably in the history of Illinois football. And
you think any coach could have won with their players last year? You think that, you know, if you brought George Halas back from the Bears, you think he could have won with four freshmen starting in the line and all those 16 freshmen starting? You really
no,
believe it's
but
all
I,
Lovie's
I don't see
fault?
Any, I don't see any building blocks to success. They're last in recruiting, back-to-back-to-back years. I mean,
well, they weren't last in recruiting with the class that's now sophomores.
That's
a good class.
What are they ranked in the Big Ten?
I don't care what they're ranked. I mean, the guys, we've seen how they play. I mean, you can't go back and worry about what a guy's ranked in high school. That's just a guess. What we see is guys developing. Well, I'm not
any offensive linemen?
Yes, absolutely. Lowe's going to be a terrific player, I think. I think, yes, I think that the offensive line is going, but we're still a year away because these guys are all sophomores.
Said that.
We knew last year was going to be a really bad year. I mean, everybody, you can't start 16 freshmen. You just can't.
Well,
I don't think you should be optimistic. I mean, that's fine, but I'm just saying there is definitely going to be improvement this year just because everybody's a year older. Some other teams graduated players. Illinois didn't. They only had 8 seniors on the team.
How can there be improvement when they're ranked 14th in every publication?
Well, I can't say that they're – all I'm saying is they're going to be better than they were. I'm not saying they're going to be necessarily better than Purdue or better than Rutgers or better than Maryland, but those are teams that they have to beat this year if they're going to show improvement that you're looking for.
I'm not there. I'm not in Champaign, but I don't see – the engagement of a football coach and a football staff. I've seen from what little I've seen on TV and in the publications and in the local news, I just don't see much engagement on the football staff. I think they had a chance to hire Bobby Petrino when he fell into all that trouble. And I thought that would have been a fantastic time to pick that guy off, give him a second chance, give him a zero tolerance policy, and they would have been in much, much better shape, much better hands. But
maybe so. Hey, Steve, what do you think?
Well, he would have the same players.
He wouldn't have. Well, he would have had better recruits. He would have had better recruits. Look at him in Louisville. Look what Louisville would have had. You know, I mean, he had a little bit better product to take over, but my gosh, he's recruiting. He's a proven college winner. I mean, he didn't do very good in the pros. So, I mean, I love him. Hey, he's a great pro coach. It's just not a good fit for college. Josh Whitman he made a mistake, and
that may be true.
No one wants to talk about it.
But I think it's way too early to give up. I think this team is evolving with the same players. If those same players don't improve, then you're right.
Okay.
Hey,
all
Eric,
right. Well,
thanks.
Yep.
Yeah, appreciate the call. 356-9397 is the number if you'd like to join us. And we've got Tim May on the line from the Columbus Dispatch, Ohio Sports Writer of the Year. How you doing, Tim?
Pretty well. I don't think y'all talked that guy off the bridge, though.
No, some of them were on there to stay, I think, and not much you can say about that. But
I just remember Lovie. I just remember Lovie Smith. I used to watch video with him when he was a assistant coach at Ohio State for a year or so, and he's one of the great guys I ever met. And of course, he and I were both from East Texas. He was from Big Sandy, and I was from Lufkin, and so we had that in common. And of course, as I was chiding him at the Big Ten meetings this year, he's got, Illinois is going to have a new look, at least on the sidelines, with him wearing that beard like that. So, and as he pointed out, all the freshmen they played last year, you don't want to ever do that. But if those are your best players, I see you play. But you get a dividend from that the next couple of years. If, in fact, those guys are, as Lauren was talking about, pretty decent ball players, and there was some indication they might be, but, the proof will be in the one loss record.
Tim, how long have you been on the Ohio State football beat?
Since 1984. Since 1984 and the great comeback win over Illinois in the Ohio Stadium.
Well, you've seen some.
Was that 83 or 84? Was that
84.
49-42?
It was 84. Illinois beat Ohio State in Champaign in 83 when Mike Tomczak was hurt and Jim Carsados came in at quarterback.
Yep.
And then 84, because I remember we all got led into the upper area of the locker room of Ohio State because I was doing sidebars on that game. And all of a sudden, Earl Bruce noticed us with our heads peeking out over the top. And he told us in uncertain terms to get the heck out.
Well, you've seen some ups and downs and some great times in Ohio State football over the years. How do you rank this current situation with Urban Meyer currently on the sidelines? And how do you think this is going to play out?
Well, I don't rank them, but it's up there on the mantle with all the other whatever, wouldn't call them trophies, wouldn't call them a headhunter and it's just a weird situation all the way around. And you know, obviously Ohio State's got a pretty deep coaching staff, you know, with Greg Schiano, former head coaches Greg Schiano and Kevin Wilson on the staff, and then Larry Johnson's considered one of the great, maybe the best defensive line coach in the country, and right on down the line, Tony Alford. But you know, missing your head coach, I mean, Ryan Day is the acting head coach, never been a head coach before, but I'm not sure exactly what that means when you've got all the, like I said, the depth they've gotten just in the coaching realm on that staff. But missing Urban Meyer, I mean, Urban Meyer is one of the top two coaches of the you know, contemporary coaches right now, and you know, not just hocus pocus. I mean, he brings something to the table. So we'll see how this plays out over the next week or so.
Are you getting any feel for what's taking place? I'm kind of surprised. I read just the other day, I guess yesterday or the day before, that the board that's doing the search here or doing the study on what happened hasn't actually interviewed some of the key people, including Zach Smith. Have you heard that?
Well, Zach Smith, of course, has been fired, so I'm not even sure if he will be interviewed, but we'll see. But yeah, we've heard that. But sometimes you don't want to interview the prime people in a situation until you have the background done.
Okay.
And then know everything that led up to maybe what a person did or didn't do. And it's really difficult right now to get a feel for even what they're going to be zeroing in on. I'm talking about from the investigative committee, because, you know, should Zach Smith have been gone from the staff earlier? What did Urban Meyer know about Zach Smith and his wife's situation, et cetera? Could he have done more? As you well know, a week ago, 8 days ago, Urban Meyer issued a statement, a long statement, where he basically said he followed proper protocol. He apologized for the way he answered questions in Chicago, but as I keep reminding people, you know, he was operating on the premise that he was being asked about Zach Smith being arrested and charged in 2015, which was the original story from the guy that broke the story about all that. And in fact, you know, Zach Smith was not arrested or charged in 2015. And that's why Urban Meyer reacted like he did, as he later admitted in his statement. He knew about the 2015 allegation from Zach Smith's wife, now his ex-wife. But, you know, if reacting to the media is going to get you suspended or possibly even relieved of your duties, that's a slippery slope.
Well, you know, I think coaches spend a lot of time trying to figure ways to obfuscate when they talk to the media anyway. So I'm never surprised when something doesn't, you know, when something doesn't quite mesh. But let me ask you this, Tim. How does the $38 million that he's owed play into this? If they decide to fire him, how long would it take to renegotiate that thing? Or, you know, I'm sure it'd wind up in court, wouldn't it?
I could make up an answer right here, Lauren, and appease you, much like that guy. You weren't appeasing that, but you didn't appease that other guy a minute ago. I don't have a clue about that because, you know, if you were let go with cause, you know, theoretically, you know, the university owes you nothing, you know,
right,
based on your contract. But then past that, yeah, there were problems. But that's really putting the cart before the horse. I mean, as we sit here today, I don't expect Urban Meyer to be relieved of his duties as the head coach at Ohio State unless there's something out there that we don't know about. And, you know, a lot has come out. Come out may not be the right word, but a lot has been revealed over the last couple of weeks about the Zach Smith, Courtney Smith relationship. You know, obviously there are two sides to any story, sometimes three, as you find out. And so we'll see where it goes and, you know, what the committee, like I said, we're not even sure what the committee is zeroing in on because of, like I said, Zach Smith was never at any time during his Ohio State coaching career ever arrested or charged with any type of domestic abuse, violence, battery, kind of like charge. He had a couple of speeding tickets and things. And of course, he and his wife, or his wife, filed for divorce in November of 2015, which was granted in 2016. So, you know, it's where do you go from there? If law enforcement didn't bring arrest or charges, you know, where do you go from there? You know, I guess that's what everybody's trying to figure out.
Talking with Tim May from the Columbus Dispatch, I'm guessing that radio programs like this and newspaper and internet comment lines have been on fire for the last couple of weeks, and probably usually are in Columbus in August as you get ready for a football season. But what is there a general consensus of what the fans want to see happen here?
Well, yeah, I think most of the Ohio State fans want to see Urban Meyer remain as the head coach. Just, you know, and then just based on what you know of the situation, you know, I think they're thinking, why wouldn't he? But then past that, you know, there may be things that pop up, and you know, as they discern phone records and digital evidence, if that's the right word, and possible paper trails or whatever that causes concern. So, you know, you don't know. I don't know what they've got. Like I said, I don't know exactly what they're looking at, you know, or zeroing in on. So, you know, what we think, like, you know, online petition by some folks, like 28,000-30,000 names of people have signed it. I mean, in the little rally they had 150-200 people at it for Urban a week ago when it was like one of the hottest days of the summer. You know, how that doesn't really factor into an objective look at what the situation was or wasn't. So, you know, only the committee knows where it's going, and it's kind of like a big oil tanker going down the you know, Suez Canal. You can't wait till it gets to the end to figure out what's going on.
Our phone line is open, 356-9397. We do have a caller for Tim May. Benny, you're on the air. Go ahead, Benny.
Pickle, what?
Benny, you with us?
Yeah, hi, Steve. Hi, Lauren. How are you guys doing this morning?
Doing good. Tim May is on the line with us. You got a question for him?
Oh, I certainly do. How you doing this morning, Mr. May?
Good. How are you doing?
Just fine. Well, I've been a Buckeye fan since 72. I don't like what's going on. You know, I say don't let him come back and coach. I mean, all he has should have said to the media, I think he should have said, I'm not prepared to answer these questions at this time, and maybe he should have said he'd be prepared at a later time, or instead of saying what he's saying. Now he's on paid administrative leave. Now, whether they decide to bring him back or just let him go, I say let Ryan Day coach this team for the whole season, and if they decide to let Urban Meyer go, we don't win enough games, then go get Luke Fickell and bring him back. I know he's been there for 1 year at Cincinnati, but, hey, he survived when Tressel had to be let go, so why don't we just do that?
All right, Benny, we'll let Tim answer
know,
that.
Man.
Thanks.
That's a totally different take, you know, than I've heard.
You better believe it.
I think he'd like to see Luke Fickell have at least one winning season, either as a head coach. He went 6-7 at Ohio State, of course, under some trying circumstances. And then last year was not exactly big time debut as a head coach, but that's really putting the cart way ahead of the horses. It's way down the road from the ranch. But
hey, Tim, you mentioned trying.
But then past that, I mean, I think Ryan Day. I've got a story coming about him in Sunday's paper. You can read it at dispatch.com later today, probably, but about his background. And, you know, he's a very sharp guy that was in the NFL for a couple of years with Chip Kelly and, you know, kind of grew up a little bit under the Chip Kelly umbrella as a quarterback at New Hampshire when Chip Kelly was offensive coordinator there. But, I mean, this is a guy who's a really sharp guy, considered a rising star in the coaching ranks. And he stuck around at Ohio State, even though Mike Vrabel wanted him as his offensive coordinator at Tennessee Titans when Mike Vrabel got the job there, and Urban Meyer juiced the pot for him and upped his pay to $1 million a year, and they think he's a very talented young coach, so we'll see how this goes.
Tim, you mentioned trying circumstances, and what do you expect to happen at Maryland now? Illinois plays.
Well, I don't know, man. I don't know. We're talking about a situation where a young man died, and you know, when you read the reports, especially from yesterday, reiterated kind of what you had heard about before, but with a little more detail on whether there was urgency in getting him, you know, proper care. That's a you know, that obviously they're wading through that as we speak, but that is not that's a tough situation there. Wow.
Yeah, and it seems to go beyond just the one incident. I call it an incident. I mean, Jordan McCarry wound up in the hospital with 106-degree temperature, but there's also accusations of verbal abuse and intimidation and involving other players and certainly the
Wait a minute. On a football field? I'm not laughing at it, but it's just, you know,
right.
It's really weird, man. I mean, it's like, you know, I grew up, you know, I'm 64 and a half years old. Lauren, you and I are at least the same age, I think.
At least.
You know, I just never quite understood why football, you know, yeah, it is analogous to war in the sense that, you know, that only the strong survive and all this kind of stuff. But I mean, I never understood why it had to be as just over the top grueling in a lot of respects from a training standpoint, et cetera, you know, and, you know, it's really funny. It's the one sport, I think, where you practice outside when it's 100 degrees and you'll be playing a game maybe in November when it's, you know, 12 degrees. I mean, it's a weird sport all the way around in that regard. But then on top of it, you know, the demands that are put on players and stuff, I've never quite understood making it as tough as it is, because really what finally wins you games, I mean, toughness does help, but I mean, you got to have the better players. I mean, that's what finally makes a difference, you know, just like Illinois is going through right now. I'm sure they're training their rear ends off, but they're not picked to win, you know, the Big Ten West, because, you know, they're still years off from just a personnel standpoint. So, you know, I just never quite understood the over the top, sometimes training that goes on. And, you know, we all know that, you know, they've backed away. I mean, football used to be about tackling and blocking way back when, and then it evolved into, you know, punishing people and attacking people in the, you know, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And now they're backing away from that because obviously the uproar about head injuries, which is definitely, you know, definitely should have been done a long time ago and things like that. So they're trying to make it a safer sport. But that goes through all aspects of it, the way I look at it.
Well, teams are now closing their practices, and I've often wondered whether they're really trying to conceal the plays or just so people can't hear all the swearing that goes on out there.
When I first started covering Ohio State football in 84, Earl Bruce, he only closed practice like for one big game of the year in the Michigan game, and we got to watch pretty much all of practice. I mean, you know, the local media did. Of course, there was only like me and another guy from another newspaper there, and maybe occasionally TV guys there. But yeah, now it's like we got to watch three periods of practice the other day for Ohio State, and everybody was going, well, you know, obviously they've closed things because of what's going on off the field. Well, yeah, they don't want us hanging out, but the flip side of it, that's all we've gotten to watch in preseason the last many years anyway. So it was nothing out of the ordinary from the standpoint of viewing time, but I mean, you know, anytime somebody closes something, you always wonder what's going on inside, you know. I mean, you know, is it really to practice secret plays?
Yeah, right. Hey, Tim, we appreciate your time. I know you're not going to have any trouble keeping busy over there, but we appreciate your coverage on this, and we'll talk to you along the way.
Anytime. Hey, Lauren, always a pleasure, my man.
Hey, listen, 64 and a half, you shook me up there. I didn't know you're so old.
There you go. Yeah, I know, man. I could be your son. Anyway, see you later.
Okay, see you. Tim May in Columbus with us this morning. Our phone line is open again, 356-9397, if you'd like to join us. We'll talk some more Illinois football after our first time out. We'll take that right now on the Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk Show on DWS. Stay with us.
This is Brian Barnhart. Hope you have a great weekend coming up. I'll be back on Monday morning, 9 to 11, with more of your phone calls, emails, and texts on the local and national topics of the day, starting at 9 o'clock Monday. Talk to you then.
Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk continues with Lauren Tate. I'm Steve Kelly. Thanks to Tim May for taking some time with us. We've got Adam Rittenberg coming up. Also, some comments from Lovey Smith and others on Illini Fall Camp. The first week is in the books. We learned a few things, I think, in week number one, watching several practices. I missed one or two during the mid part of the week, but I've seen most, and you've seen all.
Yeah, you saw some things yesterday and picked up on, I think, what we're seeing a quarterback race that's winding toward Bush. I think it always has been. I think Thomas is still in the mix, but there's only one freshman of those three that's really got much of a shot right now, I think, right now, unless things change, and that would be Robinson. What did you think of Robinson as opposed to Thomas yesterday?
I thought this week, I thought Thomas may have taken a step back a little bit. I think Bush definitely moved ahead, and then late in the week, I thought Matt Robinson made some strides. He had a long touchdown pass yesterday in the workout right before a media day, and we'll hear from him. I've got some comments from him coming up in about 20 minutes. He's a short guy. He's definitely the shortest quarterback.
When did we start calling 6 feet short?
Well, they list him at 6. It's funny. They list him at 6'1". He says he's 6 feet.
Yeah. Well, if he lists as 6'1", you know he's 6 feet.
Right.
That's kind of automatic.
That's worked out well for guys like Drew Brees and guys like that. So, yeah, it's not short to me. It may be short to you, but
no,
when he's standing
with
the rest of the quarterbacks, he's the shortest guy.
I just think, you know, this theory that you need to be 6'4 and over to see over the
right.
The front is kind of, they're all throwing through lanes. Drew Brees hasn't had any problems. Russell Wilson hasn't had any problems that I'm aware of. Now, you might want to roll him out a little bit more, and this guy can roll out. He can run. He's fast. He's faster than some of the other quarterbacks.
Here's what Matt Robinson had to say about that issue of his height.
Obviously, a lot of scouts like guys that are taller, but I mean, 6 feet, I'm about 6 feet, but they list me at 6'1". So, 6 feet, I mean, you see guys like Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, Baker Mayfield. There's a lot of guys that I kind of think it's a myth. I mean, you throw through windows, so it's not, I can see over the line fine, it's not a problem. Because I always knew I could play at the highest level, but I just wanted someone to take a chance on you, then you just get your opportunity. So, yeah, I was just waiting for an opportunity. It's a real good group. I think we're all real, real close, and we all just kind of are on the same page. We know what coach is looking for, and we know what the right thing is to do. We're trying to get everyone doing the right thing, making the right reads, correcting each other when someone makes a mistake, and just trying to get better.
That's freshman quarterback Matt Robinson. We'll hear from A.J. Bush and Cam Thomas coming up as well. Injury yesterday in practice, Jamal Milan went down. Don't know the extent of that, but it didn't look good at the moment, did it, Lauren?
Oh, no. It's something you should be worried about because they're not real deep there anyway. They do have Avery coming up. Looks like he's going to be a pretty good freshman, but he still needs to get in shape. He's probably weighs around 330 and probably would be better off around 310, I suppose. And that'll be something that we'll see happen over the course of a year. As it happened with Boyd, as it happened with Lowe. We saw Lowe come. I think Lowe at one time in high school was over 350. He played last year probably around 330. Now he's 310, and he looks good. I think Lowe's going to be one of our four or five best players. And that may or turn out to be right or wrong, but I think he's going to be one of the better players. And I just think that some guys, you know, some guys have to get bigger, some guys have to lose weight. And so I don't know as I look at the team, I see some thinness in the defensive line, particularly if Milan can't play. I see some thinness at linebacker. When Harding went down the other day, he got back up, he's okay. But I'm thinking, oh, boy, if he's out, who's our backup in the middle? And right now I think they've got three pretty good starting linebackers. But beyond that, I don't know.
With that first call we had at the top of the show from Eric in Maryland, he pointed out some things. National media, he's right. Illinois is not getting any love,
oh, no.
Especially in the national media. A lot of people think Lovie Smith is on the hot seat. I don't agree with that at this point. But Lovie, I agree with Lovie that this is a better football team than last year. Now, what does that mean? Does that correspond to four wins or any more than two wins? And we don't know that, but they look better in practice. They look more athletic. Are they still lower half of the Big Ten? Probably yes. But when you're last, you got to go. There's only one way to go.
Yeah, here's the bad part. They're last in a division that's almost last in the nation.
Right.
I just checked this morning, and the rating of the divisions. There are two divisions in the Big Ten, East and West. We all know that Big Ten East is one of the great leagues in the country. The West is number 8 out of 9. And the only other division that is weaker, supposedly, is the Pac-12 South, which has USC, Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, and UCLA, those teams. But the West is getting better, and Illinois is getting a little better, but Iowa's going to be a little better, I think. Northwestern's coming off a winning streak. You got Wisconsin, of course, and nobody knows what's going to happen with Nebraska, but we know down the road, we know Nebraska will be back. Maybe not this year, but they will be back. The thing that worries me most about Illinois is this. We are counting so much on one class. We don't have good recruits around them. We've only got 8 seniors on this team. That's terrible. That's among the low in the nation. So you got one class. As this class goes through, I think they can carry Illinois to some better degree of, for want of a better word, success. I think they will do better. But what happens when those guys are gone? I mean, you've got to follow up with recruits. And right now, the freshman class that we have in here is not near, I don't think, as good as that class. And we got a real slow start on the class that will be coming in next year. So on one hand, I don't know if I sounded like I think we're going to be better. I think we will. But I don't have great hopes if Illinois can't sustain one good class after another.
There are steps in being better. And not they don't always correspond to more wins. You got to be competitive first.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
A lot of those games were blowouts last year. We'll talk more about that. We'll talk more about Big Ten football, Illinois football, the West Division, the Ohio State situation, all those issues and more with Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.com. We'll do that when we come back. Stay with us right here on Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk on DWS.
Today at 11, it's Central Illinois Business. Hi, this is Alex Ruggieri. Join me with my special guest, Stephen Alltop from the CU Symphony Orchestra, right here on DWS.
Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk continues here on News Talk 1400 WDWS. With Lauren Tate, I'm Steve Kelly. Happy to welcome to the program Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.com. We're going to talk some college football for the next few minutes. Good morning, Adam.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Let's start in Columbus. That's where the big news in college football has been the last couple of weeks, the Urban Meyer situation. I know you've paid attention to that. How do you think that plays out?
Well, it's still anyone's guess. I think it's going to be really interesting to see who the investigators talk to and what they really focus on. You know, there's been a lot of lawyers this week who have said, well, they haven't talked to my client, and they haven't talked to my client. Athletic Director Dean Smith, it came out earlier this week, is on vacation, but is open to speaking with the investigators. So I think that's the interesting part, is trying to figure out who they're talking to and what they're really focusing on. Because I don't believe that they're focused on the same things necessarily that we're all focused on. For example, I know a lot of people were very fired up, and understandably in our position, about what Urban Meyer said to the media at Big Ten Media Day and not being fully transparent and truthful at that time. I don't know if this committee cares, or this investigative group really cares about that. So that might be an example of something where they're not putting a whole lot of time into, but they may be putting time into something else. I mean, the bottom line is, what did people know back in 2015? What exactly happened in 2015? What did they do about it after they had that knowledge? And were there actual discussions about removing Zach Smith as an assistant coach at that time based on his history, based on the correspondence between wives of the Ohio State coaches and his wife at the time, based on what happened in 2009 when he was at Florida with Urban Meyer? That's the critical part to all of this, in my opinion.
Well, Adam, let's just say that Urban Meyer is removed. What do you think that does to the football team? The last time they lost, when they lost Tressel, the team really slipped, and they had better talent than they played, I think. Would Meyer make that much difference?
He makes a difference, Lauren, as you know. I mean, the guy's 47-3 in the Big Ten. He's won a couple of Big Ten titles, a national championship. You know, that's when he does make a difference, is on game day. A lot of people have asked me how it's affecting them right now. Obviously, I think it's a distraction, but I have a lot of confidence in that coaching staff. You know, they have two former college head coaches on that staff, Greg Schiano and Kevin Wilson. They have Ryan Day, who's the acting head coach, who I think very highly of. They have a great co-defensive coordinator in Alex Grinch, Larry Johnson, one of the most respected position coaches in college football. So I think the preparation for the season is going fine, and they'll be ready to go for Oregon State. But Urban Meyer makes a difference on game day, and Urban Meyer makes a difference in the lead-up to games. So I would imagine that's when you'll see the effect. But they are certainly, as you mentioned, talented. I would not expect them to go, 6-7 like they did under Luke Fickell. That was probably the worst Ohio State team I've ever seen, and one that we probably won't see again. But it's going to impact them on game day, I would think.
You know, Adam, you wrote a column, I wrote a column both about the fact the Big Ten is so strong that there's a possibility that they might not get into the four-game playoff because they might be knocking each other off. Have you expanded on that at all or thought any more about it?
Absolutely. I think about it a lot, Lauren. And I think it's an interesting point, especially because Jim Delaney, the commissioner, brought it up a couple of times, Big Ten Media Day, how a two-loss team has never made it into the college football playoff. I talked to a number of players about how crazy it is the last two Big Ten champions haven't made it into the playoff, Ohio State last year and Penn State the year before. I would be shocked, though, guys, if a Big Ten champion is left out for 3 years in a row, because when they set this thing up, they made conference championships a tiebreaker. And Jim Delaney has really emphasized that point, and I think it's going to be a more relevant point this year. We'll see how it all plays out around the country. But I do think the overall strength of the league, as long as they take care of business out of conference, is going to help their champion. I mean, we were a Auburn win away last year from having a two-loss champion in the college football playoff, but they lost to Georgia in the SEC title game, and then the SEC obviously got two teams in. So the thing that bothers me, guys, is that the scheduling approaches around college football are so vastly different, and that there's not substantial pressure in the SEC and to a lesser extent the ACC to ramp up their schedules, to play more conference games. That's what fans should want. I mean, fans don't want to see FCS opponents. Fans don't want to see lower-level group of five opponents that are there to take a check and take a beating. They want to see exciting games. If I'm a USC fan, I'm thrilled this year that my team is playing 11 Power 5 opponents, 9 in the Pac-12, along with Texas and Notre Dame. That's an exciting schedule. That's what we should all be trying to get in this sport. Let's find the easiest possible way to get multiple teams in the playoff. That's just wrong.
Talking college football, Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com. Back to the Big Ten and the situation at Ohio State. Does what's going on there change your view of the Big Ten East?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it does, because we just don't know the effect yet on the team. You know, they are still very, very talented, and they have a very capable coaching staff under Urban Meyer. But, yeah, I think it opens it up a little bit, and it was going to be an incredibly competitive race to begin with. You look at Michigan, this is the year that many have targeted for them to break through and win the East Division and maybe get into the college football playoff. They have a lot of experience coming back. Michigan State has tremendous experience coming back. I was up there earlier this week at their media day, and there's not a ton of stories around them because it's a lot of familiar faces. Brian Lewerke at quarterback. Their defense returns most of their starters. Only one offensive starter lost. So Michigan State's going to be formidable. And then Penn State, I think, is overlooked because they have the best quarterback in the conference right now in Trace McSorley. And while Saquon Barkley was a once-in-a-generation player, an iconic player, and will be missed at Penn State, Joe Moorhead did a great job with their offense, I don't think Penn State's going to take a step back.
Who's Wisconsin's biggest challenge in your mind in the West?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I think it's probably Iowa, Northwestern, or Nebraska. And Nebraska is going to have to move up significantly under Scott Frost, which I think is possible. And he's a really good coach, and he has a great success at UCF. But I don't think their roster is in position right now to contend. You know, Northwestern's interesting. A lot back on defense. They won 10 games last year, but they have a big question mark at quarterback. They benefit from having Wisconsin at home this year, a really good home schedule overall for Northwestern. And then I think Iowa could be a sneaky good team. I don't think their quarterback, Nathan Stanley, gets enough credit for what he did last year, and if he can build upon that, I think Iowa certainly is a threat. But, Wisconsin has, in my opinion, by far the best team. I don't think this would be the year where, they're going to win the division by default because everybody else just isn't very good. I think Wisconsin's really good, and I think their offense could be the best we've seen there since Russell Wilson was up there in 2011 and set the FBS single season passing efficiency record, 33 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. I'm not saying they're going to do that exactly, but I love their offense. And then defensively, guys, they have been the second-best defense in the past 5 years, numbers-wise, behind Alabama. And if that comes anywhere close to it this year, even though they lose a lot of starters on that side of the ball, you know, Wisconsin, you know, shouldn't have too much trouble winning that side.
Well, Adam, we got to ask you about Illinois and Lovie. Some national talk about Lovie being on the hot seat. I don't think that's the case at this point. But, of course, I think by next year we might be talking differently if they don't turn things around a bit. What's your thought about Illinois and Lovie?
Yeah, I think, again, with a lot of the hot seat talk, people look at the record and just make assumptions. And I've probably been guilty of this, too, at times. But when you look at the contract situation, you look at the you could call it risk or move, bold move that Josh Whitman made in hiring Lovie when he did and kind of going all in with him. I'd be very surprised if they pulled the plug after 3 years, unless it's just so difficult and they're not making progress and maybe both sides decide, you know what, this isn't working out, let's go our separate ways. But I would imagine Lovie is going to get another chance in year four, especially if they show progress. And let's be honest, guys, it won't take much to show progress this year, especially if some of the younger players, that they know they played a ton of them last year, improve. You know, I really like the hire of Rod Smith as offensive coordinator. I've known Rod for a long time. He's been in the Big Ten at both Indiana and Michigan. Was most recently still if Rich Rodriguez didn't get let go in January. So I think Illinois certainly has a chance to improve, and they're going to need to improve.
Another question for you before we let you go, Adam. What are your thoughts on the new redshirt rule where a player could play up to four games and still maintain that redshirt?
Yeah, I love it. I hate to agree with coaches on something this much, but it is really a great rule for both coaches and players, and it's going to be fascinating to see how different programs use it. You know, in doing some of the media days, SEC and ACC and Big Ten, you know, you talk to some programs that don't bring in players to redshirt. Ohio State doesn't do that. Georgia doesn't do that. Alabama doesn't do that. But then you talk to a Wake Forest or, you know, a Minnesota or your programs like that where you have redshirted guys and it's developmental. And I think it's going to be great, especially late in the season when you have injuries or if you have guys that simply have matured physically and mentally. You know, they're not ready to play right now, but they're ready to play in November. I think where it's going to be most impactful is the bowl season. I think the bowls are going to be really exciting, more exciting, especially if they're mid to low-tier, low-level bowls. When you get some young guys in there, maybe it's a new quarterback who can propel you into the offseason or a new running back or a new defensive lineman who everybody's excited about. So I think the bowls are going to be a lot more watchable now because of this rule.
You know, Adam, it looks like the NCAA is trying, without going all the way to, you know, to professionalism, the redshirt rule being one, and looking over to basketball, you got the ability of draftees to return if they, you know, to return to college. You got the agents now being permitted in certain situations. Do you see the NCAA is trying, making an effort to do things that benefit the athletes?
They have to, Lauren. There's so much pressure on them to start paying the athletes, and they obviously don't want to go that far. That, in their mind, would be completely giving up on the model, the collegiate model they talk about and they hold dear. But they have to do this. They have to do something else if they're not going to go that direction. They have to make it easier on players if they want to go pro or come back or have agents or make moves between schools or try to get on the field. You know, so I think some of the rules of the past, which were much more in favor of the schools and the coaches, have been loosened because there's tremendous momentum and the attitudes that have changed nationally about these guys need more. And a lot of people think they need more money, too. So they're stopping short of that in some respects, but they're giving a little bit in these other areas.
Have you been working on your travel plans for the fall? What games are you looking forward to seeing in person?
Yeah, that's one of the big myths about my job, Steve, is that I plan out my schedule. I kind of go where I'm told. I mean, there's certainly places I'd like to go. You know, week one, Michigan-Notre Dame is going to be such an important game nationally for both sides. So decent chance I'll be in South Bend, but nothing confirmed yet. I mean, there's certainly spots and coaches I want to see and hopefully get out there a decent amount here when the season begins and hopefully get down and see you guys as well in Champaign.
Well, Adam, we're looking forward to seeing you again. Thank you very much for coming on with us, and we'll be after you in a few more weeks to find out, after those first few games, just to see what the land looks like. Thanks again.
Sounds great, guys. Have a good day.
That's Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.com. He's a Big Ten guy, Northwestern graduate.
I think anybody knows more about college football than Adam Rittenberg. If so, who would it be?
Good question. I mean, I can't think of somebody offhand. There are a lot of guys out there.
A lot of guys that know a lot. You're right. But, I mean, he kind of covers it all, and that he really gets around.
He covered – he worked a little bit for BTN, then went to ESPN kind of to focus on the Big Ten. Then now he's expanded into to all of college football. So he's been on with us a few times, and good information. 9:49, need to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk some more Illinois football, hear from Lovie Smith, maybe a couple of the quarterback candidates as well. Stay with us on Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk. Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk continues. Speaking of Illini Pella, they're open until noon today. If you're looking for a replacement window or door, or maybe more than one, how about a trip to Illini Pella, the window store at 1001 North Country Fair Drive in Champaign. Ask for Mike Mary. He's got a great staff out there. They've been assisting homeowners in Central Illinois for more than 40 years, and they do it the right way. There are a lot of things to consider when replacing windows and doors. Security, obviously. Comfort, convenience. A great window or door is only as good as the installation, and the Pella Window Store has many examples on the showroom floor in several styles and price ranges. If they don't have it on the floor, they'll look it up for you, show it to you on a computer. Entry doors, sliding patio doors, hinged patio doors, storm doors, casement windows, double and single hung windows, sliding windows, specialty windows, just to name a few. You'll find them all at the Pella Window Store on North Country Fair Drive. They're open, as I mentioned, until noon today, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. Check them out online. Get an idea of what the products look like at PellaOfChampaign.com. PellaOfChampaign.com for Illini Pella, the Pella Window Store in Champaign. 9:52, Lauren Tate, Steve Kelly with you. Phone lines are open, 356-9397. On the Pella Window Store, Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk. Busy first hour so far. Talk some more Illinois football. We heard a little bit from Matt Robinson, one of the freshman quarterbacks. The guy that seems to have moved to the lead in the quarterback competition is A.J. Bush. Here's A.J. after the first week of workouts.
It's been great, man. Like, I just have been enjoying, you know, just working in this new offense and just showing everybody on this team what I can do and what I can bring.
Talk a little bit about some of that. What do you feel you can do and bring to this?
I can bring a lot of things, man. I can bring a new, exciting option to this quarterback room. I can also bring just the leadership that this young team needs. And I got a lot of experience with a lot of things. So I can spread my knowledge, be a sponge to my coach, and then just continue to teach my team and lead by example.
Talk a little bit about your relationship with Rod, how long you've known him and known about his offense.
Well, me and Rod, we've been communicating since, was it February or March? And I've been knowing him in person since like May 19th. So we just been getting along real good. Like, I love Rod. Rod's a good dude, man. He knows how to teach. He knows when to get on you. He knows how to learn his players, you know what I'm saying? He doesn't just coach. He, like, knows the players he's coaching. So it's good just to learn from him because, like I said earlier, he started the RPO, him and Rich Rod, over at West Virginia. So, I mean, you can't help but, you know, be a sponge off that.
That's A.J. Bush.
Well, you know, I talked to him after that interview, and I asked him kind of a lead question. How did the battle between you and Josh Jackson go down last year at Virginia Tech? And he said, well, it went to the wire, and he said, he beat me out. They gave him the first shot. He threw for, I don't know, 2,500 yards, and they were 9-4, and he never gave up the position. And he was second team all year. He got in five times, as you know. He had a 35-yard run early in the season. And so he is a runner, and he is a passer. He's a left-handed passer. It doesn't look like it's the perfect delivery style, but he gets the ball out okay. He throws deep well. He seems to, at least. He has no problem throwing the ball 50 yards down the field. But he said that he realized that, he said, look, he said, I could have stayed at Virginia Tech, but this guy went 9-4. He's going to be in there all the time. Most of their games are close. There's not much of an opportunity for me to get in if nothing happens to Josh Jackson. So there he is. I don't know how good he is. We'll never know. Maybe he wouldn't have been able to go 9-4, or maybe he'd have gone 11-2 if he got a chance. Who knows what he'd done? But anyway, it was a close battle, he said, and it came down to the two of them, and he didn't win it.
Yeah, if a guy throws for 2,500 yards, it's pretty certain that the number two guy's not seeing much action.
Well, no. He only threw 11 passes, as I recall.
Right. And Cam Thomas, of course, was in a somewhat similar situation in that he didn't play much, and he didn't get a chance to show many passing skills during the time he did play.
But the one thing that they insisted on, they wanted running quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Rod Smith must have a quarterback who can run. His quarterback at Arizona ran a lot, and many of their yards, I mean, they were top 10 in the nation, it was a quarterback running. And what I see here is a lot of misdirection. When the ball is handed off, it isn't necessarily handed. It's kept a lot. There's a lot of misdirection in this offense that we didn't have before, and you certainly didn't have when you had Westlund, and you certainly didn't have when you had George playing last year. George transferred because he didn't fit into this offense. He's at Michigan, by the way, and they've got, you know, I looked up their quarterback depth chart yesterday, and he's not listed among the top four. I think Shea Patterson will be the starter there, but nobody sees Michigan practices. Nobody knows what's going on out there. It's a secret. Harbaugh keeps it secret.
You heard A.J. Bush talk about the RPO, the run-pass option system, and that's exactly what they were looking for.
That's what he likes to do.
Yep.
And he's a runner.
Here's Lovie Smith yesterday at Media Day talking about the quarterback competition.
All the guys have had their moments where they've gotten reps. But once you start playing guys and giving them reps, they kind of tell you who should get a little bit more, and that's kind of where we are right now. Of course, we don't have a starter or haven't named a starter, any of that. We just like the progress of, you know, A.J. Bush coming in, first time running offense. So that's been neat to watch him. You notice him, you hear him, which is a good thing. And, of course, Cam Thomas has been, you know, ran offense in the spring. He's done some good things. And then it's about, you know, we have three freshman quarterbacks and letting them compete to get that rotation down. You can see when one player makes a good play, the others, of course, out there congratulate them. And, you know, just the quarterback room has to be a tight room. They spend a lot of time together. All positions do, but quarterbacks a little bit more. They realize we don't have to tell them what's at stake. They all realize that. And they know when they get their opportunity, you need to make plays.
That's Lovie Smith. Phone lines are open, 356-9397 on Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk. Joe in Urbana. Hey, Joe. Hey, Joe, are you with us? Joe, going once, going twice. You're out. Call us back, Joe, if you'd like. 356-9397 is the phone number. Saturday Sports Talk. Illinois football practice was scheduled to be this afternoon, and they moved it to tonight, 8 o'clock.
Yeah, I think it's good to work at night. I think it's they're going to make some real decisions. They'll spend Sunday on the studying film of this week and tonight, and I think we'll have a better idea about a depth chart next week, although I think we have a pretty good idea right now based on the way they play them, but there may be some shifts in that. And we're not sure who all the receivers are going to. Justice Williams may be a receiver. Sam Mays looks pretty good as a receiver. We see Cooper, the freshman, playing. Also, there's just a number of guys that are going to. I'd see there right now. There are 8 or 9 guys that could wind up being in that rotation for at receiver.
You heard Lovie talk about A.J. Bush and Cam Thomas. Here's Cam Thomas on fall camp reps.
To be honest, it's getting back to how it was when I first got on campus. Evan and Chase Crouch and Jeff George here. So I wouldn't say I like it, but I'm kind of used to the feeling of sharing reps and taking mental reps. And I feel like mental reps are just as important as the physical reps you take. You can learn a lot from watching what other people do, seeing them make the right reads or making the wrong reads. So when AJ's in, I try to take that time to be able to look at coverages without having to feel the pressure of the rush, see where safeties are rotating, and really decide where I'm going with the ball and see if AJ was thinking the same thing, see if we're on the right page, see if we're doing the things that we were taught in the film room. I feel like the competition makes me play a little bit harder, makes me get out there, focus more, and really try to work on the the small details of playing quarterback.
That's Illinois sophomore quarterback Cam Thomas. We've hit the top of the hour, WDWS, Champaign-Urbana. Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk will continue with hour number two after this. Stay with us.
It's the second hour of Saturday Sports Talk. Join the program by calling 217-356-9397 or send a text to the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. You can also email us at talk@wdws.com. Here again are your hosts, Lauren Tate and Steve Kelly.
Welcome back to the program, everybody. Hour number two. Busy first hour. We talked football with Tim May from the Columbus Dispatch. Also Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.com. Heard some comments from Lovie Smith, A.J. Bush, Matt Robinson, Cam Thomas, some of the guys vying for the quarterback position at the University of Illinois. More football talk coming along. Do have a question on our Castle Heating and Cooling text line. That number, by the way, is 351-5357. Bill in San Jose, Lauren, wants to know, hey, Steve and Lauren, any update on the Comcast and BTN situation? Quick answer is no. But
absolutely not. We don't know what's going to happen.
There's I don't even know if they're talking yet.
This is going to be one of those midnight decisions.
They want you to miss something, you know. Let the games get started and have the outcry of we're missing this, we're missing that, and they want to feel wanted, I guess.
Do you think it'll be solved by September 1 with all those games on that date?
That's what I mean. They might miss the first week. I don't know. There's a couple of games before September 1.
Well, they can have those.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You're right.
And
August 31st is it? Yeah.
And the Notre Dame-Michigan game is NBC, so that game will not be affected. You can see you'll be able to see it, but the game's on that Fox and the Big Ten Network they're in trouble.
So the answer is no. We haven't heard exactly what's going on with that, but I'm guessing as we get closer to September, the talks would at least start, and then maybe start.
Have you heard whether there's actually negotiating started yet?
I have not.
Because, you know, Silverman has stated that
they weren't calling
they
back.
Won't even respond.
Right. Yeah,
but they got to respond at some point, surely.
You would think so. Let's talk some Illinois basketball. Kedrick Prince joins us, as he has a time or two in the past, from the Dispatch Argus in the Quad Cities and Rivals.com. Kedrick, how are you doing this morning?
Good morning, General. How are you today?
We're good. Illinois didn't get some good news, but I guess it wasn't a huge surprise on Khalil Whitney's news this week of his commitment to Kentucky. It sounded like Illinois was in that recruitment down to the wire, but it's hard to turn down Kentucky, I guess, when you've got the program they have and you're that kind of player.
You know what? I was kind of surprised, but then again, I wasn't. Then again, I was, if that makes any sense. You know, going back to last year, when that recruitment started, this recruitment with Khalil probably changed my perception of recruiting till the day I die. I thought Illinois was the leader. I really did. I thought at one point in time, you know, given the history and things that happened in the past, and the reason why I said this is changing for me is because, you know, I knew Illinois was, you know, they were in great shape with him. And I knew the history behind it. This whole recruiting thing started you know, years ago with his connection being from Chicago and then with Mac Urban Fire. And I was just surprised that he went to Kentucky. And the reason I was surprised is because I know Kentucky's one of the blue bloods, but there were ties for Illinois, and I just thought it was going to go their way. But at the end of the day, too, you know, there's so many more kids out there, so many other athletes, and I think it's disappointing to Illinois fans because a lot of them thought he was a lock, so to speak. But I think, you know, him going to Kentucky, you know, it's hard to turn those schools down.
Talking basketball recruiting with Kedrick Prince. Phone line is open, 356-9397. Maybe on the good news side, Terrence Shannon has come up with a Final Four. Illinois is in that with DePaul, Florida State, and Maryland. How do you size up that recruitment?
You know, I'm never going to say never until the kid actually commits. I think Illinois is in great shape with him. Looking at the schools that are on his list, that I think Illinois will be able to compete with those schools. I know he's very, very high on the University of Illinois. There's some loyalty to the kids, Lincoln Park kid, another Matt Curvin Fire kid. He fits that Brad Underwood mold. He's a nice athlete. And I know the staff, what's unique about this staff, gentlemen, is that they don't lay all their eggs in one basket. You know, you got Khalil, who was a 6'6 kid, you know, Terrence, 6'7. So Brad Underwood is just trying to reload, and he's recruiting to fit a system, which I really, really love about him as a coach. But I think the chances with Terrence Shannon, you know, at this point right now, I would think would be pretty good, you know, looking for toward the University of Illinois.
Back to Whitney. He was all three schools that were going to the wire, Oregon, Illinois, and Kentucky, were Nike schools. Did the shoe company relationship have anything to do with it?
You know, with the schools, the final schools, I do think so. I know with all the, you know, recent scandals going on with the NCAA, Lauren, I still think there's some connection with a lot of kids and a lot of AAU programs and colleges with that. You know, how they go about, you know, handling those things now, they're a little different. But I do think that had a lot to do with it. Not with his decision, but I think that played a big part in it. And it's going to continue to do it. I mean, because some of these schools are funded by certain schools, and, you know, it's still money involved. So, but not specifically, and I'm not saying that in his case, because I don't want people to say that's what, you know, we're thinking. But I do think sometimes that plays a part in some schools with kids. I really do.
Does Nike support Mac Irvin Fire?
Yes, they do, and I know they do, and you know, and that's a great program. And the University of Illinois, Lauren, is in a great shape because I know the coaching staff, not just Chin Coleman, the entire coaching staff, and they've always supported Illinois. I mean, Nick and those guys, they've always, you know, supported them. And I know if they can get kids to go to school there, that's their home state. I've interviewed those gentlemen before, and they said that to me. They've given, I don't want to say given, that's a bad choice of word. You know, Illinois landed Iodisumu from them, you know, who's a 5-star kid. So I think, yeah, to answer your question, I do think so.
Let's go to the long list of, I saw where Illinois had made offers, and I don't know if this is true. Rivals and Scout have a long list. It's of over 40 players. I think it's over 40. It's certainly over 30 that they have offered this year for this coming year. How many of those are serious?
You know what? That's a great question. I'm not saying Illinois, but sometimes schools will offer a kid because it's the right thing to do because other schools do it, if that makes any sense. There was a kid recently, and I don't want to say his name, but Illinois offered a kid, and I know Minnesota, I think Purdue probably did it because other schools did it, but I don't know if they really, really pursue these kids and really go after them, because you're not going to get that many kids. You're just not going to, because one, there's not enough scholarships. But they have put some, you're right, on 2019, you know, you got Christian Braun, a shooting guard. You know, you have Trey Jackson, a small forward. You know, you got Kaden Shedrick, a power forward, you know, Jaquan Scott, he's a 2020 power forward. They have put out a lot of offers because they know that's the recruiting game. This staff is very, very aggressive in the recruiting world. They're out there. Everybody knows that, you know, Illinois is going to be a player and a factor, and they're going to compete. You know, and I think so many times people look at who they don't get, but they need to also look at who they have. I mean, I think from an Illinois standpoint, people are a little bit frustrated because, you know, Khalil has some Illinois ties, but if you look at the best player on the team coming back, this is no disrespect to Kipper Nichols, is Trent Frazier. He's a kid from Florida. He's not an Illinois kid. So you're not going to get those Illinois kids that they once had before. Like, you know, you're not going to lock up the state. It'd be great, but you're not going to do that anymore. It's a different day and age.
Got a question on our text line. That number, by the way, is 351-5357. Are you familiar with a kid from Geneseo named Isaiah Rivera, and how might he fit into the Illinois program?
Well, believe it or not, he visited Illinois unofficially last year. I was there, close in the area. He is really, really – actually, Jamal Walker, assistant coach Jamal Walker was here. I was there when he went to watch him work out. My kid's come a long way. He had a great summer. His stock is starting to rise. I talked to Tom Kakert, one of our colleagues from Rivals, and Iowa's now really, really going to take a serious look at him. And again, he's visited Illinois. He's long. I love his arms. At one point in time, the knock on him was his shot was a little slow to get off. I think he's improved that, and I think his stock is going to rise, especially, you know, within the Midwest and Big Ten schools. So he may end up being a serious contender, a player for Illinois. I know there's some good relationships there with them and the staff, and I know I've talked to the kid myself personally, and I know he likes the University of Illinois, and he loved his visit. And I know his coaching staff, his head coach Brad Storm, loves the University of Illinois. So if that kid continues to improve and Illinois continues to pursue that avenue in Geneseo, that may be a good look for them.
There's another guy that is getting a lot of notoriety, a big guy, I believe, named Drew Timmy. Am I saying that right? Timmy is his last name. What do you know about him?
Well, he's another guy that everybody seems to think that Illinois has a good shot at, you know. But here's the knock. I mean, I don't want to say this as in a bad way, is that a lot of people are saying that Illinois has put so many offers on the table to where some of these kids are going to be concerned about playing time. You know, he's a 2019 power forward. The kid has 21 offers already. So some of these kids are starting to say, you know, they're putting these offers out there, and, you know, and is the playing time going to be there for us? He's a big 6'10 kid. He's, you know, top 50 kid. Illinois has got some competition for him. You know, you got Arizona, California, Florida. But he's athletic. He can shoot it. And he's a good passer. If you look at the kids that Brad Underwood's kind of going after right now, those are all kids that fit those molds and kids that can defend. So I know they're trying to get him in for a visit as well.
I wouldn't think a kid should be concerned with the number of offers that are out there by any one school. There's only 13 scholarships. Yeah, the competition probably is going to be the same anywhere.
Every school is offering 20 or 30. I mean, it's just, right. They all, it's come routine. I was shocked a couple years ago. I was checking on Indiana, and I started looking at all the offers they made here and there and everywhere, and I thought, man, that's unusual. Hey, that's not unusual anymore. They're all doing that. So I don't know why. I think probably the kids that, even though they're offered, if they're not receiving almost daily contact from the coaches, they know they're not first priority, I suppose.
Lauren, you're exactly right. And that's when I made the comment earlier, when some colleges, you know, will offer a kid just because other schools do it. Because if a school really wants you, you're going to know. You're going to get people like myself continuing to call to go evaluate. You know, the same thing, you know, with Brad, you know, and the guys over at 24/7. We're going to evaluate. The coaches are going to call them. They're going to go see those kids play. But when you don't, you know, sometimes a coach will offer a kid and don't talk to a kid for a month or two. Those are just offers to put out there because to let you know that we appreciate you as a player. Because the bottom line, they're not. And I don't think some of these kids even just fit what these programs are looking for, but you want your name out there. It looks good. You know, you look at social media when a kid makes his top 10 list, you know, and you see that eye standing up there. That's, believe it or not, that's good for Illinois. That's getting their name out there. Whether they're pursuing that kid that hard, that remains to be seen. The only people who know that really is the staff.
Talking basketball recruiting, Kedrick Prince is with us for a few more minutes. 356-9397 is the number. Or you could text us. We've got a couple of texts and a question from Terry in Clinton. Is Illinois ever going to get a big, dominant big man like Kofi Cockburn? And I read this week where Kofi is a 300-pounder now. He's a big fellow. What can you tell us about his recruitment?
Well, I'm going to tell you, just real quick, though, to answer that question. If you look at college basketball, which I know you two gentlemen do, it has changed so much. It's not, you know, who has that really, really big, dominant guy anymore? I mean, you just don't see him, you know. And I think so many people have not, you know, no disrespect to the person who takes the question. I mean, those days are done. I mean, Indiana didn't have one. Michigan State had guys who were long and athletic. You know, if you look at Samba Cain, you know, who's a kid that's coming in, he fits today's mold of college basketball. You know, so to me, you know, I don't even think Brad Underwood would even, you know, to be honest with you, those type of players today, I don't think that fits his system. I don't think that's the way the game is going anymore. I mean, who's Shaquille O'Neal anymore in college basketball and in the NBA? So I just look at it differently, and I think the staff has. Is it nice to have size? You have to have it. We know that's what hurt Illinois last year. They just didn't have enough big guys and guys that could rebound and play defense, but you got to be able to step out and shoot it. You got to be able to defend on the perimeter. You have to be able to do all those things. So, you know, he may be a kid that's just being looked at because it's a guy that they're going after that, you know, maybe other schools are looking at. That's my personal opinion. I just don't see him being a guy that is an Illinois type of system guy, if that makes any sense.
You mentioned Samba Cain. We also had a text question about the latest on him. And Lauren and I asked Brad Underwood this just a week or so ago. They're still going through the steps to get him here, and they hope to have him here later this month. Are you hearing anything differently on him?
Yeah, Doug, our recruiting coordinator over a publisher at Rivals, talked to us a little bit and told us that, I mean, he talked to Samba maybe last week, and he's planning to be here and at the end of the month. I mean, things are looking good. I mean, everything he was supposed to take care of, he's taking care of it, and he said that he talked to him, and he's supposed to be on campus. He kind of stinks that he wasn't on campus to get what those other freshmen got, you know, the weight training and, you know, the skill development. But so he'll be a little behind. You know, fans are going to have to probably be a little patient with that. But as far as him getting on campus, he's supposed to be there, and, you know, everything is, you know, going as planned, I guess.
There's another guy, a football player by the name of Keevan Myers, who's from Dallas, Texas, who 6'5", 330, who is also awaiting academic clearance. And I don't know when that's going to take place, but sometimes, especially when guys change schools, it just takes a little longer for them to get cleared by the clearinghouse.
It does, because the schools, they look at everything. I mean, even the junior college transfers, people will be surprised. The classes that they took in junior college don't transfer over. And then the student athletes, and this is probably recruiting that maybe some people may not realize, that, you know, if a kid transfers from junior college and they, you know, want to go to the University of Illinois, and the university has to look at those classes to say, hey, what was done? And they ask students, what did you cover in that class? What was in that? Because they don't always transfer over, you know, and you look at it from a high school standpoint, like Samba, who changed classes and, you know, and then, you know, prep school. So all that stuff plays a big part in it. Because with all the things going on with college athletics today, they have to cover their behinds. And it is so much work to get into a school now. I mean, my daughter, who just recently tried to do it, it's like a full-time job just to get passed through everything. The NCAA is really trying to clean things up. It's not easy anymore. I mean, if you have a loophole, you better be really good at doing it, because NCAA is clean. They're really trying to clean things up behind the scenes.
One name we haven't mentioned, and we'll end on this, E.J. Liddell. What are you hearing about him?
You know, when I talked to E.J. Liddell, he was really, really high in Illinois, but I think his family was concerned with everybody just assuming he was an Illinois and Missouri kid. He really wanted to branch out. You know, he wanted to become a national recruit. You know, he struggled, you know, early in the spring, but he ended up doing a lot better toward the end. I think Illinois is going to be in a dog fight with him. I think they have shown interest. I remember at one point in time, you know, most of the recruitment was done by Jamal Walker, you know, and I was talking to his dad. He really, really wanted to get to know Brad Underwood. He really, really wanted to know, you know, hear Brad Underwood's voice. He wanted to know what Brad Underwood's visions for his son was. So, you know, they're not out of the mix. I think people just assume that Illinois didn't have a chance with him. Whether he looks at all the blue bloods, Illinois is going to get that look, whether he commits to them or not. And at the end of the day, guys, Illinois has to win games. They have to show that there's some promising things on the court. And the same thing with Lovey. You know, we can talk all the recruiting we want, but at some point in time, both programs need to sustain some winning seasons and some bowl games and some NCAA tournaments. It's attractive. It's really attractive to have those, and some schools use that against Illinois. And so with EJ being as good as he is, and Lauren and I both love him as a basketball player, that kid has the total package. He's a difference maker, and they need a kid like that. So what they do this season, to me, you know, may help them lure somebody like that.
Real quick, we talked about Terrence Shannon having Illinois in his Final Four. Any idea when he might make a commitment?
I'm going to ask. I know he just made that, you know, that official last night. Yeah. I'm going to wait till Monday, and I'm going to give him a call, and I may shoot you guys a text and let you know when he's looking to do that. He's being hit hard right now with everybody. Once he put the Final Four list of schools together, you know, those four schools are all trying to get a hold of them. Actually, the schools he eliminated. So if I find that out, you know, I'll shoot that to you guys, and I'll let you know, what he's thinking and when he's trying to get it done. I know most kids want to commit early now so they don't have to worry about it heading into the season, even though, you know, he's going to a prep school.
All right, Kedrick, appreciate it. We'll talk to you again in a month or so and see what's new between now and then.
Well, we'll see you down at the football games. We'll be looking forward to talking to you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Kedrick Prince with us from the Dispatch Argus over in the Quad Cities. Also does some work, as he mentioned, for Rivals.com. Moving up on 1023, Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk with Lauren Tate and Steve Kelly continues after this.
This is Brian Barnhart. Hope you have a great weekend coming up. I'll be back on Monday morning, 9 to 11, with more of your phone calls, emails, and texts on the local and national topics of the day, starting at 9 o'clock Monday. Talk to you then.
1026, Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk, Steve Kelly, Lauren Tate. Until 11, phone line is open, 356-9397. If you missed the baseball scores from yesterday and last night, Cubs beat the Nationals 3-2. Cardinals over Kansas City 7-0. White Sox got by Cleveland 1-0. PGA Championship is continuing. They had some weather issues yesterday down at Belle Reve in St. Louis, but Gary Woodland has the lead at 10 under par after two rounds of 64 and 66. Kevin Kisner is second. He had a couple of rounds at 67 and 64. He's a shot back. Brooks Koepka had the round of the day yesterday, 63.
Unbelievable.
He had a long putt for 62 that didn't come close, but he made it for 63, so he's hanging in there. Dustin Johnson, another shot back at minus 7, and Thomas Peters. Had
Thomas
rounds
Peters
of 60,
minus
67 and 66. Yep. So he's minus 7, and they've got the third round underway today. The leaders haven't teed off yet down in St. Louis, but we'll see how that plays out. We'll hopefully, if things go the way they have, it'll be an exciting Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Particularly if Tiger gets in it.
I miss having Steve Stricker in it, and yeah. I miss this year having Mike Small in it.
Well, you just have to follow Peters.
Yep, we will. Talked to Smalley yesterday, and he was in the office. I said, "What are you doing in here?" And he said, "I'm not here enough. I'm trying to catch up on some paperwork and things like that." He's got the big annual outing, the Steve Stricker outing for his golf program coming up next weekend, next Sunday and Monday, at Olympia Fields. And by the way, there are still a couple of openings. If you're interested in playing in that, get a hold of Mike Small at the Illini Golf Office. He can tell you more about that. A little bit later in the show, I'm going to talk with Renee Sloan, the women's golf coach. She has a fundraising event to play in, if you're interested in that, coming up later this month. So all that still ahead here on Saturday Sports Talk. Illinois football practicing under the lights tonight. They play a night game in the second game of the season, so I guess they wanted to get a feel. It'll be the first time in the stadium, too.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's good. I'm disappointed we can't see it, but I think we'll see the results of it Monday when we come out to practice and see who's playing where.
That's their excuse to take it into the stadium. Let's see, how can we get the media and the public out? No, I'm just kidding. But but they can do that. It's hard to do that over at the rec field.
Steve, if you've got a new coach and a new offense, which they do, you don't want to give everything. I mean, I'm sure that he's a little self-conscious about throwing everything out there in practice where everybody can see it. Not that the first game, you know, Illinois should be able to beat Kent State anyway. And I don't think Kent State has anybody over here. I still remember years ago there was a guy up in a tree watching practice on that field. They went over. He was the father of a player. He wanted to watch practice.
He wanted to see his son play.
They wouldn't let him. They thought, oh, this guy must be a scout or something. You know, he's trying to get information. They went over there and found out it was the father of one of our tight ends.
How would you like to be the guy that the coach says, go get that guy out of the tree? Talk to one of the managers. Let's go to the phones real quick here before we take our break at the bottom of the hour. Bob in Chicago. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Steve, I'm coming down. I haven't been to U of I in a long time to play the Orange course next week. Have you been out there lately? How are the greens, fairways? Has it been beat up by, like a lot of courses have been, with fungus and so forth? Just wonder what your thoughts are.
Have you ever played the Orange?
Oh, yeah. I used to work out there in the late 70s and 80s. So,
yeah, it's in great shape. They've got a little issue on some of the tee boxes with some crabgrass getting in there, but otherwise it's really good shape. The greens are like they always are. Don't get above the hole, stay below the hole.
Right.
They're pretty quick, but since they've gone to the bent grass fairways 4, 5, 6 years ago, they've kept it in great shape. They've figured out the best watering plan, and a lot of times when courses go to that, they overwater it at first to make sure.
They've gotten rid of some of the sand traps.
Yeah, they've restructured some of the sand traps. They've taken some out. They've made some smaller. But they figured out the watering.
Do they have sand at them?
Yes, they do. They went with a different kind of sand out there. It was more of a limestone-based sand. It's a little bit heavier and I think more expensive,
good,
too. But it stays in the bunkers a little
won't
better.
Won't blow away as easy, huh?
Yeah. And every golf course in this part of the country has that issue with sand traps, no doubt. But I think you'll enjoy it. It's in great shape. They do a good job down there.
All right. I'll look forward to getting out there next week. Thanks, guys.
All right. Bob, I appreciate the call. It is 10:31 here on Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk. Had a Brewers fan text me. He said he'd like to hear the Brewers score every now and then. I'm sure he knows this score from last night, but we'll try to.
You didn't want
to
hear this.
No, it's 10-1 Atlanta was the score there in that ball game last night, but we'll try to incorporate those Brewers scores in the fact that they're chasing the Cubs with 3 games back right now.
Yeah, I'd like to know what the Brewers record is for about the last month or so. It seems like they've dropped a lot of games. I mean, they haven't been the same dominant team they were earlier in the season.
They're 4-6 in their last 10, and they've lost 2 straight, and overall they're 66-53. They're 3.5 games ahead of the Cardinals and 3 behind the Cubs.
3.5 is doable.
It is. And the Cardinals are kind of getting back in that wild card conversation, but there's a lot of teams there. That's the problem.
Yeah, they got about 4 to catch. But the thing that's interesting to me, about, you know, I would have lost interest in the Cardinals if they kept playing the same players. But these young, they threw 2 young pitchers. Gomber pitched, 5 or 6 innings yet last night. And then they come in with another rookie, you know, Ponce de Leon. It's kind of interesting to watch guys that you've never seen. These are all young guys, one after another. They had a shutout. They won a game the other day with 4 pitchers. And, Steve, you knew their ages, but they were like 21, 23, 23, and 24.
Ponce de Leon was the old guy at 26.
Yeah.
Dan, who had texted me earlier on that, he wanted to make it clear he's a Cubs fan, not a Brewers fan, but that's why he wanted to hear the Brewers score from last night. But
I understand.
We appreciate you listening, Dan. Need to take a break at 10:33. Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk continues after this.
Today at 11, it's Central Illinois Business. Hi, this is Alex Ruggieri. Join me with my special guest, Stephen Altop from the CU Symphony Orchestra, right here on DWS.
Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk continues here on DWS with Lauren Tate. I'm Steve Kelly. Phone line is open, 356-9397. With you until 11 o'clock. We got started at 9. Been a busy hour and a half or so far. Talked some Illinois football, Big Ten football, some baseball, basketball. Let's stay on basketball for a little bit. J.D. Collins is with us on the line. J.D. is the officiating coordinator for Big Ten basketball officials. How are you this morning, J.D.?
Good morning, Steve. I'm doing well. Let me give a little correction. I'm actually the NCAA national coordinator of officials.
Okay.
I just want to clarify that. Yeah.
Stepping up in the world, huh?
I don't know about that, but I enjoy what I do. How are you this morning?
Good. You were an official for how many years?
25 total. Had 18 at the Division I level, and had a little knee replacement, which cut that career a little short.
I was reminding Lauren earlier this morning about a time, I don't know, half a dozen or so years ago, maybe more than that. We had you on our radio program at the Beef House over in Covington, Indiana. You may or may not remember that, but we had a good conversation with you there.
Oh, absolutely. I do remember it. It was if I'm not mistaken, that was a joint event between Purdue and Illinois. Is that correct?
It was. Yeah, it was.
And I spoke
that worked
with
at the time.
I spoke with the great Jim Bain that night, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah, that Purdue-Illinois thing was a situation, as Lauren mentioned there. It worked at the time. I'm not sure a joint thing like that would work these days, but you never know. But what are some of the big issues or things of concern for basketball officials on the college level heading into the upcoming season?
Well, first of all, it's a non-rules change year. We do rule changes basically every other year. We had a couple minor changes this year, special changes, if you will. But the main focus is going to be to continue what we call the directive to reduce physicality to create freedom of movement. There's six areas in that: hand checking, freedom of movement for cutters, offense-initiated contact, post play, rebounding, and screening. And the officials will continue to drill down on those areas. The net result of the rule changes and the directives have been about a 3.5 points per game per team increase over the last 3 years. And that comes off of a 25-year decline in point totals per game. So that's the main focus that the officials will have this season.
J.D., this is Lauren. I want to get around to the ending of games because I'm never satisfied when I see a game take forever with a lot of fouls and a lot of referees going to the clock repeatedly. Do you have any thoughts about that, or is that something that even bothers you?
Well, just to be very transparent about that, there are several committees, the Oversight Committee, Competition Committee, Men's Basketball Committee, that are all concerned about how long the last 2 minutes of a game take. And the difficult balance that officials have is that the monitor is there for their use, and they want to get the play right. That's the number one issue, is getting the play right. And yet, if we have two or three of those stoppages in the last 2 minutes, it just adds to the length of game. So we are constantly looking at that and looking at ways to improve or quicken the pace of those reviews. But at the same time, the officials have to balance making sure that the play is right. And unfortunately, one of the longest, you know, if you have a flagrant foul, those are going to be long reviews. But the out-of-bounds play and who touched it is one of the longest reviews. And yet, in the last minute of a game, that possession may determine who wins the game. So it's a very difficult balance, Lauren. And certainly myself and the folks that I report to and through are very aware of that issue. And we continue to try to figure out ways to make it better.
Is there any talk at all about six fouls? I know Rich Faulk was very much in favor of that when he was a Big Ten director of officials, and I haven't heard much talk about it lately.
It has been a subject that creeps around now and again. The problem with six fouls, there's a problem and there's a solution. The problem is that if you add another foul, we're only going to increase physicality in the game because players tend to, you know, they're going to maximize the number of fouls they have in a game. That also will slow down the game because potentially the more fouls you have, the more free throws you're going to shoot. So that is, if you will, in the face of what you pointed out earlier. Man, the end of these games takes a long time. Well, there's a balance there. In the early to mid 80s, the Big East did an experiment with six fouls, and at the time, it only increased physicality. It made, and this is, I'm quoting Art Hyland here, who's the secretary rules editor and used to be the Big East coordinator of officials. Art says, hey, that was a good trial, but it only made a physical league more physical at the time. And so with our efforts to reduce physicality, it seems to be getting less and less airtime lately, Lauren.
As you, you're in charge of officials, are you bringing in enough young, new officials into the game?
You know, it's very interesting because nationally at the high school level and below, there is a shortage of officials. But I will tell you, Lauren, right now, there are more talented young officials available for refereeing Division I in basketball than I think ever before. And different leagues around the country are bringing in new officials, and it's a maturing process, not only for the official, but for coaches getting to know those officials. But my answer to your question is yes, I think there's a abundance of very good young officials. Now, in the games that I assign, which are the NCAA tournament, in the last 3 years, we have brought 15 new officials into the NCAA tournament. The downside to that is there's 15 officials not working the NCAA tournament that worked it before. But in my opinion, you have to bring in new officials to prepare for when officials retire, prepare for when officials get injured, when they leave the game. And so I personally am focused on making sure that we have not just 15 new officials in the game, but we've also had a high number of officials working regionals, and we've had at least three new officials every year in the Final Four, so that we have multiple officials who have experience at that level.
Now, there are a couple of minutes with J.D. Collins, who is a former official, as you mentioned. What's the toughest call in college basketball? Is it the block charge, and has it always been the block charge?
Well, I think if you line 10 officials up, you're probably going to get about 7 different answers.
Okay.
I think the block charge play, while from a fan perspective may appear to be the hardest play, referees are taught to referee the defense. And so we determine whether the defender is legal, and then we referee the play. Most fans that watch the game will watch the ball and where's the ball at. So when they're watching a guy drive the lane and he's got the ball and now there's a crash, they don't have any idea whether the defender is legal or not. And if the defender is legal, he can't be wrong. So it in that situation, it'd be a charge. But I don't personally think the block charge play is the most difficult play. I think either the out of bounds play in getting that last touch, and I'm not talking about a guy throws the ball out of bounds. I'm talking about it goes off of my foot, off your hand, off your leg, over here, and it's bouncing around. Those are extremely difficult plays for officials, especially as we get toward the last couple minutes of a game to get 100% right.
My question is about film. How much film do you watch? Do you watch any film with the other officials? Do the officials watch film of their games among themselves? Do you prepare that way?
You know,
go ahead.
I'll address me watching film. And in order to do my job for the NCAA, I attended 80 games in person last year, and I broke down another 80 games on film. And I'm constantly looking at plays that people send me. Is this, you know, how do you adjudicate this play? Is it this or is it this? Mm-hmm. So personally, yes, I look at a lot of film, and I have probably 3,500 plays from last season banked so that I can create training tapes for the officials as we teach and train them via video. In each of the major conferences across the country, each conference is requiring their officials to look at game film afterwards. We have 20 conferences that use a product called DV Sport. DV Sport is used for in-game reviewing of plays, but it also has a very nice teaching aspect, clipping plays, sending them back and forth. And I can guarantee you that when an official walks off the floor, they know the 3 or 4 plays in the game that were hard or questionable. And because they get the DV Sport download right after the game, they zip right to 838, look at that block charge play and say, okay, I got that one right. Or I missed it. Why did I miss it? And I think we're in a technology era where there are products available to us which allow us to hone our game. And I think without question, the officials and certainly the coordinators of officials are requiring them to look at plays after games.
Hey, J.D., appreciate your time. Good to catch up with you again. And we'll keep you on our speed dial for when we have basketball officiating questions during the season. But thanks for taking time with us this morning.
Thanks for allowing me to be on. Look forward to talking to you. Have a great day.
Thanks,
you
JD.
Too. J.D. Collins, former Big Ten referee, and as he mentioned now, former Big Ten director of officials, now NCAA director of officials.
And I want to thank Sam Banks for setting that up for us. Sam, of course, is a longtime official himself and had the same problem that J.D. did.
That's right.
That darn knee.
Yep. 10:48, Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk continues after this. Stay with us. Steve Kelly catching up with Illini women's golf coach Renee Sloan. Time flies, does it not? You're getting set for one of your major fundraising events. Tell me about that coming up.
It does indeed fly. Yes, we're getting ready for our fourth annual Illinois Women's Golf Classic. It will be on August 27th at Lincolnshire Fields Country Club. And looking for a great day of fun and golf with the community members, our alumni, and just fans of our women's golf program.
How has this idea grown over the years? You've said you've done three of them. This is number four, so it must be going well.
It is. It is. It's a great day for our team members to interact and build relationships with the community members and our alumni, a chance for them to meet our incoming freshmen. They're all involved in the event. The team members are actually out on the golf course hitting shots for every group that plays, and they also attend the Illini Hour the night before. So it's a chance to really communicate, develop those relationships, and get to know each other.
We'll give some other details before we finish up, but how do people get involved with this?
There are several different opportunities available, obviously playing in the event. There are different sponsorship levels available as well, and so they can feel free to contact me, Renee Sloan, 217-333-8610, or email me, and we will get the info out to them and would love to have them join us.
We'll give those numbers and an email address again a little bit later on. But let's talk about your team now. You're coming off one of your better years, maybe your best year since you took over how many years ago?
This is my 13th year. So as you mentioned, time does fly. But yes, 13th season coming up. And yes, last year was extremely successful for our program. You know, highest ranking in school history at the end of the season, number 23 in the country, three team wins, basically rewrote the record book in every category, and so it was a tremendous year for our program. We're looking forward to building off of that.
Second place finish in the Big Ten, too. That was nice.
That was indeed nice. Absolutely. It was great to be in the mix there, coming down the stretch and being tied for the lead. We were in the clubhouse tied for the lead, and with the final pairing still out on the golf course, but an exciting position to be in for sure.
That was fun, but this is now. And what have you done for me lately, right? Yeah. Tell me about your team and the people you have coming back. And I notice it's kind of a young team, too.
It is. It is. It will be a very young team. But we've got three experienced players coming back in Bing Singh Somali, Tristan Nowlin, and Ali Morales. Each one of them played in every tournament, basically, last year for us. So a wealth of experience there. Two all Big Ten performers as well in Bing and Tristan, and then we have five newcomers to welcome to the program, each of them experiencing success this past summer, obviously throughout their junior careers as well, but we're excited as to what they're going to bring to the program as well.
And a couple of key losses. Remember those folks for us.
Yes, we had four seniors graduate this past May, and you know, they were kind of the glue of the program for the past 4 years, and really made a tremendous impact in moving our program forward and have set the foundation for what lies ahead. So we're very appreciative for what they've done for our program and really laid a great foundation for us.
You mentioned the four newcomers. Do they come in with pretty good credentials?
Yes, we've got some AJGA champions and All-Americans and you know, highly ranked in the junior golf world. But as you know that was then and this is now. So we're excited about the possibilities that exist for us and the transition. That's always the challenging thing is student athletes come in that freshman year and especially those first few months just making a smooth transition. So we want to do everything we can to aid in that process and allow them to get off to the best start possible.
Another minute or two with Renee Sloan, and if you folks would like to help the U of I women's golf program, there's a way to do it coming up in a couple of weeks. Let's talk about that event again real quick.
Absolutely. Illinois Women's Golf Classic. Feel free to contact me R. Sloan, that's R-S-L-O-N-E at illinois.edu. And my phone number, 217-333-8610.
Renee, good to see you. Thank you very much.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
That's Renee Sloan, the Illini women's golf coach. As we mentioned, finished second in the Big Ten last year. That event is coming up later this month. Also, the Steve Stricker outing for Mike Small's Illini golf team is next weekend, next Sunday and Monday, the 18th and 19th, or the 19th and 20th, whatever those dates are. But it's coming up next week, and we'll talk with Mike Small along the way about that as well. 10:55. Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk. A final break, some final words after this.
This is Brian Barnhart. Hope you have a great weekend coming up. I'll be back on Monday morning, 9 to 11, with more of your phone calls, emails, and texts on the local and national topics of the day, starting at 9 o'clock Monday. Talk to you then.
A couple of minutes before 11 o'clock on this Saturday session of Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk with Lauren Tate. I'm Steve Kelly as we move towards the top of the hour. Busy day today. We started out talking college football with Tim May from the Columbus Dispatch. He's covered Ohio State football since 1984. A lot going on over there, even if there wasn't going on with the coach. It's always a busy time.
They
over
got
there.
Some very interesting early games. That third game with in Dallas with Texas TCU. That's going to be a really good game, a big game for as far as the playoffs are concerned.
Also talk with Adam Rittenberg on college football. We'll have him on occasionally. He's with ESPN.com. Used to work with BTN, a Northwestern graduate. And we heard from Lovie Smith, A.J. Bush, Cam Thomas, and others. Matt Robinson also heard from him from the Illinois football team in the quarterback battle. The Illini football team scheduled a workout tonight at Memorial Stadium under the lights. It is closed to the public. They'll be back on the rec fields there off Florida Avenue come Monday morning. We began the second hour visiting and talking basketball recruiting with Kendrick Prince from the Dispatch Argus in the Quad Cities. He also works for Rivals.com. J.D. Collins, the NCAA coordinator of basketball officials, spent a few minutes with us. And Renee Sloan, the Illini women's golf coach, all participating in Saturday Sports Talk. Mr. Tate, we'll talk to you soon. A week two, I guess, kind of. A little over week two, but football practice.
Another big week. They'll be going hard this week, and then they'll start probably letting up a little bit.
That's going to take care of the Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk, August 11th edition. Thanks to Blake Landa for his help. We appreciate you listening on News Talk 1400, WDWS in Champaign-Urbana. For Lauren Tate, I'm Steve Kelly. Have a good weekend, everybody.